G'day everyone, this is Benjamin, aka The Terrible Australian, and welcome to the very first edition of my 2018 Melbourne International Film Festival, or MIFF for short, audio reviews. This is my seventh year covering the film festival for supermarcy.com, and if you've listened to all my previous audio or video reviews that I've done for the festival over the years, you'll know exactly what to expect, but for those who are listening for the very first time, every year in Melbourne, we have, over the course of 18 days, we have this major film festival that's probably without a doubt the most prestigious and most well-known of all the film festivals in Australia, which of course is the Melbourne International Film Festival, aka MIFF. So I'll be covering the film festival once again for the seventh time this year, and I'll be doing audio reviews for every single film that I will be seeing at the festival. This year is definitely, without a doubt, my biggest one, mainly because this year I am seeing 60 films at MIFF this year, so that is quite a lot of films. I will admit I did go a little crazy once the full program came online, because there was just so much great stuff playing at the film festival this year, so I was just excited just to see everything. So and that's what I kind of just tallied up to in the end. So usually, like I've done for the last few years, when I've done my audio reviews, I kind of did them like two films per audio review. But since I'm actually covering 60 films, and I figured I might do something a little different this year. Instead of covering two films per audio review, I'm going to be covering four. So these episodes will be a little bit longer than usual. Usually I would do them within about 10, 15 minutes. So there is a chance that this will probably extend to about maybe 20 plus minutes. So basically, in a way, I'm kind of treating these audio reviews as if they're kind of mini podcasts. So as a chance of them possibly being more than 20, 25, maybe even 30 minutes longer, depending on what I have to say about the films in particular. So these will be a bit longer. If you heard my other ones previously, like I said, you'll know what to expect. But yeah, expect these ones to be a little bit longer, because I will be covering a lot more films per episode. So for this very first edition, I'm going to be covering the first four films that I saw at MIFF this year. Which, of course, were the films Free Faces, Let the Corpses Tan, Piercing, and Wildlife. So those will be the ones I'll be reviewing for this very first episode. So let's get right into it. And now the very first film I will be reviewing is the film Free Faces, which, of course, is the latest film from Jafar Panahi. And the plot summary for this film, which I am reading off the MIFF program guide, is as follows. Jafar Panahi's eighth MIFF appearance in his three-decade career, Free Faces follows the response of an alarming video sent to actress Benaz Jafari by a rural teenager. Branded an empty-headed brat by a close-knit community for chasing her dreams, the teen contacted her idol in desperation and frustration. But when the girl's message ends abruptly, Panahi and Jafari are concerned for her well-being. What starts as a road trip to save a struggling young woman becomes a revealing conversation-heavy journey through Iran's stifling village life, with Panahi's roaming camera capturing the ebbs and flows of their daily reality, as well as the ingrained subjugation, I probably butchered that word, sorry, of women. Now, I haven't seen many of Jafar Panahi's films, but I did see his previous film that actually played at MIFF a couple years back, which was a film called Tehran Taxi. You can check out that episode a couple years back if you want to hear my thoughts on the film. But I thought that film was terrific. So when I heard that his latest film was going to be playing at the film festival, it definitely was on my must-see list for sure. And I will admit, I don't think Free Faces is as great as Tehran Taxi was, but I still thought it was still a really good film nonetheless. And in a lot of ways, it does sort of cover some similar themes that Tehran Taxi did before, but in terms of like what life is like in Iran and how it sort of and both its citizens and also in particularly women are sort of treated in that country. And so in that way, the film does cover very similar ground, but at the same time, though, it kind of has this mystery at the core of it, which is since both Jafar Panahi and Benazir Jafari, if I butchered their names as well, please forgive me, are sort of on this journey to find out what happened to this young girl. And from the very beginning, because the film opens up in a very specific, with the video that the young girl sent to both of them. And it is a very gripping video. I won't say what happens, but it definitely is a very disturbing video as well, in a lot of ways. So from the very beginning, the film just grabs you. And from there, we go on this journey with Panahi and Jafari as they're trying to go find what happened to her. And so at the core, it has this mystery with it, which I thought was really compelling, while also at the same time using that sort of trying to find out what happened to this girl as a way to explore what life is like in Iran for both women and its citizens, especially for younger women who definitely don't want to sort of live the way that their communities want them to live. And in that way, it really works very well. I found it such a compelling film. I will admit, though, there is a certain point. I think the first two halves of this film are great, but once it gets to the third act, which even though I thought was still good, it does start to lose a bit of steam, at least for me anyway. And I could explain why that is, but that would kind of go into spoiler territory. So I won't go too much into that. But also at the same time, though, so that's kind of like my big main criticism of the film is the third act, which I can definitely see what Panahi was definitely going for. And I think in that regard, it works well. But again, since I can't reveal why what happens in the third act to explain why it lost me a little bit. Yeah, it loses its impact a bit for me. But it's not to say that there isn't some really great stuff in it. It's really well directed, really well acted, and it also has gripping as the story is, it also has a lot of really funny humor in it as well, which sort of livens up the mood. And it's also interesting to kind of see, you know, this how the story is presented in a way that I thought was really compelling. So overall, Three Faces is a really solid, really well done film that I really liked. But at the same time, it didn't sort of hit me as hard as Tehran Taxi did in terms, because that film for me felt like everything about it kind of worked. Free Faces does for at least the two thirds, but then once I get to the third act, like I said, while it's not bad, it just kind of loses steam a little bit and a little bit of its focus as well. But that again, it's well directed, has some beautiful cinematography, especially at particular shots which I thought were great, and the performances were all really well done as well. Like, it's a really solid film, not as good as Tehran Taxi, but it's still a great film in its own way. So if I had to give Three Faces a rating, I give it a solid 4 out of 5. Now on to the next film, which of course is the spaghetti western 70s pulp influenced action film Let the Corpses Tan. And the plot summary for this film: in this frenetic homage to cinema's seedier retro fringes, a band of thieves make off with a truckload of stolen gold and find themselves in an all-out firefight at the home of a bohemian artist who lives among ruins. Now, Let the Corpses Tan, which is the latest film directed by, and I'm probably going to butcher these directors' names as well, so please forgive me, Helena Catet and Bruno Fazzani. Again, if I butcher their names, please forgive me. If you don't know who those directors are, they're probably best known for their previous two films, Armor, and probably most and the one that most people will probably recognize, the strange color of your body's tears. And this is their third feature film. And this is only the second film of theirs that I've seen. I saw Arma only just recently for the first time a few months ago. And I have to admit, I didn't really like that film. So when Let the Corpses Tan was going to play at the film festival, I was still definitely very intrigued to see it because I heard a lot of really good things about it. So I thought I'd check it out. But funnily enough, this film almost didn't make my final list, mainly because when I found out, it was on the list at first, but then when I found out it was playing on Amazon Prime Video Australia, I thought, okay, I'll take it off the list and put something else there and I can just watch it at home. But then I kept sort of going back and forth, like, maybe I should see this on the big screen. So I put a poll out on Twitter and asked people, should I just watch this at home, since I could at that point, or just watch it in the cinema? And pretty much it was a near landslide. People told me, you have to see this in the cinema. And so I thought, okay. So I put it back on the list. And I have to say that, you know, the people who voted in that poll for yes to see it on the big screen were right. As much as I wasn't a fan of Arma at all, I found Let the Corpses Tan to be a much better film in a lot of ways. Like, it still has all those 70s aesthetic and visual style that the two filmmakers are best known for in their previous work is full on display here. But what makes, at least compared to Arma, because I still haven't seen The Strange Color of Your Body's Tears yet, I feel like at least this one, compared to Arma, actually had a plot. And at least, well, even though, yeah, the plot wasn't really that cohesive overall, but at least it had somewhat of a plot. And also, what it may lack in character development, because the character development is definitely not the strongest suit of this film. What I felt made this film work for me is that it made up for, you know, its kind of incoherent story and lack of character development by making up for being a sheer awesome experience of style. And like, visually, the film just looks spectacular. And the sound design, which I definitely noticed a lot in Arma as well, and especially in this film, is really well done. And this film is basically like a sound designer's, like, fever dream. Like, if you're going to be a sound designer, definitely watch this film, because you can learn a lot on how the sound design works in this film. And visually, it just looks spectacular. The cinematography is just breathtaking. And what I really like about Kated and Fazani as filmmakers is that they know how to perfectly capture and perfectly replicate that 70s filmmaking style and aesthetic. And because, I mean, seriously, if you didn't know this film was made today, you could have sworn it came out either in the late 60s or the 70s. And visually, it just, in that regard, it just looks great. And they do have a couple of their little tendency. Like I said, it doesn't really have much in terms of character development or story, but it has enough to at least made me engaged enough to be hooked in by the film. But it was definitely the sort of the strong visuals and sound design and score that definitely sort of kept me hooked throughout. I do admit, though, sometimes their tendency to do lots of close-ups, especially on faces, did get slightly annoying. It annoyed me a lot more in Arma than it does in this film. But yeah, it's a little annoying, but not as much as it did in that previous film. So, but overall, it's also a fun film as well. Like, it actually has some pretty intense action set pieces. And since it's mainly entirely in one location, it just made it much more of an intense experience. And I just really enjoyed this one a lot. And it was a good one to watch with an audience. So yeah, this one, I definitely, if you love sort of 70 modern day takes on 70s cinema, definitely check this one out. It is a lot of fun. Like I said, it's visually stunning. It's also got this sort of psychedelic kind of vibe to it as well, because there are some pretty trippy moments in it. And yeah, it's just really a lot of fun. Like, don't go in expecting like much in terms of story or characters, this is definitely a film that is should be watched purely for style alone. And that being said, it's a great amount of style as well. So if I had to give Let the Corpses Tan a rating, I give it a 4 out of 5. It is a lot of fun. Now, moving on to film number 3, which of course is the horror comedy Piercing. And the plot summary for this film is as follows. Comedy doesn't get much darker than Piercing, a widely inventive and confronting feature that tackles subjects like abuse, sex, and violence with a kinky S&M twist. Piercing begins with Reed, Christopher Abbott, wielding an ice pick over the cradle of his newborn baby. But he soon realizes the best way to exorcise his demons involves a plan to dismember, so he books a sleazy hotel room and a call girl named Jackie, played by Mia Wasikowska. Now, Piercing, like, I never heard of this film until I read it in the program, but it definitely had a lot of hallmarks in it that made me very intrigued to check it out. Like, again, the premise sounded really interesting. And also, it's got two great actors at the center of it. Mia Wasikowska, of course, a great Australian actress, and I'll watch anything that she's in. And also Christopher Abbott, who's an actor who I've been seeing a lot of films over the years, and I think, and from what I've seen him as an actor, he always does a really strong work. So in that regard, just seeing these two actors together definitely was intriguing to me. The fact that it's also sort of a film, besides the plot that I mentioned before, it's also kind of, also at the heart of it, a sort of a cat and mouse kind of story. And those kind of films are always intriguing to me. And the film itself was written and directed by Nicholas Pesce. And I probably butchered his name as well, so forgive me. If that name doesn't sound familiar, he's probably best known for his previous film, which was his directorial debut, which was the film The Eyes of My Mother. So if you haven't seen that film, definitely check it out. It is great. And this film, and also, and what I like about Piercing is that it's a complete 180 compared to that film. This is a film that has a lot of color. While Eyes of My Mother is sort of set on a rural area, like on a farm, this one's set entirely in the city. And I like the fact that it has this kind of very ultra stylized look to it in a way, because as much as it's set entirely in a city, but sort of the way it looks, it feels like all the buildings in the film kind of look like models. Like, they don't look like real buildings at all. That added act to me just really added to the film. And also, whenever characters and cars, you can clearly tell that they're sort of shot in front of green screen. So there's that kind of stylistic kind of look to it, which I thought was really cool. And like I said, it has a lot of color in it. And tonally, it's very different, because this one definitely, even though it is a horror film, it definitely is played more for laughs than Eyes of My Mother was, which was definitely full-on horror. But also, this movie is pretty messed up as well, like just like Eyes of My Mother was. Like, it starts off pretty messed up, but as it sort of goes along, it just gets more and more messed up. And that's what I really enjoyed about it. And the fact that, and it should come no surprise that the film was actually based on a book that was written by Ryu Murakami, who actually also wrote the book for the film Audition, which of course was turned into a film by Takashi Miike. So if you've seen Audition, whether the film or read the book, you'll know what to expect from a film like Piercing. Let's just say there's it features a lot of really messed up stuff and also a lot of things getting pierced. So which is definitely very, if you are a person who doesn't like that type of stuff, this film will definitely be a nightmare experience for you. But overall, I really enjoyed the film a lot. I think both Wasikowska and Abbott give great performances, and they have really sort of, their sort of chemistry with each other is really well done. And even though it does feel like a bit of a stage play at times, since it's mainly just two characters, like, you'll get the occasional other character popping in and out here and there, but it feels more like a stage play than anything. But that's what I kind of really liked about it. It just felt, it actually added to the sort of claustrophobic feeling of the film. And just visually, it looks great. The music is really good. And a lot of the scores were actually from scores from giallo films. Like, there's one scene in particular where they use the theme from Suspiria, and I kind of geeked out a little bit when that played during a certain point. So there's a lot of that stuff in the film that I just really enjoyed. At the same time, though, I feel like compared to The Eyes of My Mother, Piercing, as much as I enjoyed it, isn't as good of a film as it is. And I think the main reason why that is that I kind of felt like it needed to be longer. It's about the same length as Eyes of My Mother, about 75 to 78 minutes long. But I kind of felt with Piercing, though, it should have been longer. And the main reason why that is because I kind of felt that it just ended. Like, it has a very anticlimactic ending, and I'm not going to spoil what happens, but, and in a way, I kind of dug the film for doing that, but at the same time, I kind of wanted more, or at least more of a resolution, and a more of a proper ending. But overall, it's still a really enjoyable film. It is really messed up, it is twisted, so if you love films like that, definitely check it out. I just really had a good time with this one. It is pretty twisted, but I enjoy a good twisted film. So if I had to give Piercing a rating, I give it a solid 3.5. It's not perfect, especially since, like I said, it is very anticlimactic, but I had a good time with it nonetheless. Now on to the fourth and final film, which I'm reviewing in this episode, Wildlife, which is the directorial debut of actor Paul Dano. And the plot summary for this film, which once again I'm reading from the MIFF program guide, is as follows. Ed Oxenbould, is a 14-year-old quiet and observant teen. His parents, Mother Jeanette, Carey Mulligan, fumbling with the expanding female world of 1960s America, and Jerry, Jake Gyllenhaal, struggling with what it means to be a man who can't hold down a job or support his family, are drifting apart. And when his dad leaves to fight a nearby wildfire, it's the last straw. As Jeanette starts exploring her options outside of just being a wife and mother, Joe is forced into an awkward position of being both a voyeur of and participant in his mother's new life. Now, as you would expect, why I put Wildlife on my list to check out at MIFF this year is because it was the directorial debut of actor Paul Dano. And to me, Paul Dano is probably one of the most talented young actors working today. And the fact that he made his directorial debut with this film, which I have heard has gotten a lot of great buzz from other film festivals across the world, it definitely was on my must-see for sure. And the fact that it was also the opening night film for MIFF as well, definitely was a big coup for it. And while I didn't see it on its opening night screening, I did see one of the other little screenings that it held a few days later. So I had a lot of expectations behind it, like the fact that it's, you know, co-written and directed by Paul Dano, who co-wrote the script with actress and real-life partner Zoe Kazan, and as well as you got a great cast with Carey Mulligan, Jake Gyllenhaal, and of course young Australian actor Ed Oxenbould, who probably, for a lot of you listeners out there, will probably know him from either the Australian films Paper Planes or The Butterfly Tree, or the sort of the US films The Visit and Better Watch Out. So he's a very talented young actor. So, and it also had a lot of other aspects to it as well, and that made me very intrigued. And I'm happy to report that I really liked Wildlife. Now, I know a few people who have seen it were kind of a little cool on it. Not to say that they didn't like it. They just thought it was a good film, but it didn't quite live up to their expectations. But I have to say, for me personally, I really liked the film a lot, and I was really sort of taken by it from beginning to end. And I think I'm not going to say it's the most original film of its type. I mean, if you've seen a film where it's about sort of the disintegration of a family with so much sort of inner turmoil and trouble between them, you kind of know what to expect with a film like this. But what makes it work for me overall is that it's such a delicate film and a very subtle film in the way how it's handled and crafted, that it doesn't feel like, usually films like this would go into melodrama, but luckily Paul Dano never does that at all. He just has such a really good eye for the way how he controls this film from both a writing standpoint, directing, and also a performance standpoint. And as you expect, being that it's a film directed by an actor, all the performances in this film are great. Ed Oxenbaum, who's kind of our audience surrogate throughout this whole movie, is just wonderful in the film, and you really get taken by his character and his story throughout, and how, from his point of view, like what's going on between his parents and how it affects him emotionally. But also, as the parents themselves, Jake Gyllenhaal and Carey Mulligan are both splendid, particularly Carey Mulligan, who is just phenomenal in this film and definitely up there as one of her best performances. This is a performance, in my opinion, should get an Oscar nomination because she is that good in it. And Jake Gyllenhaal, he's great as well, but I'm actually kind of surprised that he wasn't in the movie as much as I thought it was going to be. Like, I thought he was going to be in it a lot more, but really, once his character kind of goes off to go fight the wildfire with the fire brigade, he's kind of out of the picture for a majority of the film, especially in the entire second act. So, and it's just the relationship between the character of Joe and his mother, and sort of what happens when, like, Jeanette as a character, sort of like with everything that's going on and how this changes her in a person and how her viewpoint of what she was like before, like all this stuff happening with her husband, kind of changes her. And what I really like, though, there are things like I could definitely see some people might be judgmental of what she does in the film, but I don't feel like the film ever takes a judgmental view of what she does. And in a lot of ways, you do empathize with what she's going through. And the thing is, you actually do. And what's great, though, about the film is that it takes a very even hand approach, and it, like, no, it doesn't judge anybody's actions in this film, and you can understand in their own viewpoint why that is. And especially when you kind of see this film from the character of Joe's eyes as well, and him, like, trying to come to terms with all this. Also, in terms of as a director himself, I thought Paul Dano did a really good job. Like, I can definitely see that, having talked to a few critic friends of mine after the screening, as some people kind of felt like his direction was a little static, for a lot of the film, but I felt like it worked for the film because even though there are some really well done stylistic choices in the film, he doesn't use his direction to kind of make anything stand out in terms of his filmmaking. Like, he lets like what's happening on screen happen on screen without doing any of the bells and whistles that some directors do. And I think as a first time director, I think that's a pretty smart move. So that way it doesn't distract us as the audience when we kind of see all these like very sort of experimental or filmmaking touches. Not to say that's a bad thing, but I think for this type of story that he's presenting, it's appropriate that it's not a film that has, you know, that is not really about visual style, but rather focus more on the performances and the writing. And like I said, in terms of negatives, like I said, it doesn't really add anything too new that we've seen before in other films like this, but how it sort of does it, it's really well done. And overall, I really like the film a lot. I thought it's definitely worth checking out. If you're a big fan of any of the actors in it, definitely seek it out. It is a wonderful little film that I definitely recommend for sure. So, if I had to give this film a rating, I'd give it a solid 4 out of 5. I really liked this one a lot. And that's it. That's the end of this very first edition of my 2018 MIFF audio reviews. I hope you guys really enjoyed it. Once again, I do apologize for these audio reviews going on a little bit longer than they will be for the next couple. But like I said earlier in this episode, since I am covering 4 films per review episode now, they are going to be a little bit longer. That being said, I hope you guys still all enjoyed it anyway, and I hope that these reviews were very helpful, whether you decide to check out these films or not. So for the next episode, for episode 2, I will be reviewing the films Shoplifters, A Cute Misfortune, Thoroughbreds, and Bodied. So keep a lookout for that for episode 2 very soon, and I'll see you guys all then. See everyone. Bye.